Dear students of my course, this is part 5, lecture 5 of my network course. You should open first starting the PhD SEM 5 PowerPoint file, and then you should see the title slide, which is Networks and Stability Part 5, Examples of Networks. And now, in the first slide, you will see protein structure networks. This is the title of the slide. And these protein structure networks are actually the network representations of the structures of single proteins. Here we need to define the network, so we would need to say what are the nodes of the network. These are residues, amino acid residues. And what are the edges of the network? These are interactions, chemical interactions between amino acid residues. We call also these networks amino acid networks, therefore. We may define these networks by defining the nodes as atoms of protein structures, but if we define the network this way, then atoms are quite numerous and amino acids are quite fewer. So to make a network which is visualizable, which is comprehensible, we usually define the nodes as amino acids. Obviously, the atoms of a single amino acid chain are kind of always together, so they do not change their relative position to each other if the protein structure is changing. On the other hand, amino acids do change their relative position towards each other as the protein structure is changing, or if we are speaking about a different structure of a different protein. So this is why it is kind of rational to define the nodes as amino acids. Now, to make things simple, usually edges are not defined by careful analysis of chemical bonds, secondary bonds usually, van der Waals bonds, for example, or disulfide bridges between amino acids, but network edges are defined in these networks as distances, as Euclidean distances between the amino acid side chains. Obviously, you have to define the kind of center of the amino acid side chain to define the distance precisely. So there are tiny details of this procedure. But you can actually rationalize this in the way that if two amino acids are relatively close to each other in a protein structure, then you might expect a certain amount or certain strengths of secondary chemical bonds, if not a primary chemical bond, if not a covalent bond, which is a disulfide bridge, between them. Obviously, disulfide bridges are relatively sparsely represented in proteins, because these can be formed only in extracellular proteins, because the intracellular milieu is reductive and it doesn't allow this. So usually these are secondary bonds, and this is why we may actually say that roughly speaking, distances, physical distances of two amino acids are corresponding to a type of secondary bond between the two amino acids in the protein structure. But anyway, even if we are not rationalizing the edge like a bond, then we are just rationalizing the edge as the distance, and then we are saying something about the structural representation of the protein, which is important enough by itself. So how do we construct a network from a 3D image, from a three-dimensional image? This is the way. We are rationalizing the edges as distances between the amino acid side chains. So in the next slide, it is showing you the information that, not surprisingly, this network is also a small Wern network. What does it mean? It is meaning that amino acid side chains are fairly well connected with each other. So if you are starting from one amino acid side chain, within a very, very few steps, you can reach the amino acid side chain, actually any amino acid side chains in a protein structure. Now, I would like to warn you that this is actually true for globular proteins, mostly fibrillus proteins like titin, for example, or actomyosin, or other fibrillus types of proteins like collagen, for example, may have a larger distance between the amino acids which are on one end or the other end of the fibrillus structure. But globular proteins have really a smaller representation, but the degree distribution is not scale-free. Now, the question might arise, why the degree distribution is not scale-free? What does it mean, actually? This does mean that we do not have hubs, large hubs, in the protein structures. What does it mean in this particular network? We do not have amino acids which have a large number of neighbors. Now, I would like to ask you to pause a little bit and to ask yourself the question, what can be the reason of this? Now, if you were thinking a little bit about this, pausing my voice for a while, then you might have considered actually that amino acids have a physical size. Their van der Waals bones cover a certain region in space. So if you yourself have a physical size, and you would define your social network not like the network what you have at Facebook or Twitter or wherever you might have a social network, Instagram and so on, then what you would define your social network, then the persons who are physically touching you at the same time, then you immediately understand this problem. Obviously, there might be 10 people who are touching you at the same time. Might even be, if you are good enough in acrobatics, 20 people who are touching you at the same times. But I can't really imagine that there might be a representation or a kind of configuration of people where 100 people are touching a certain one person in the center at the same time, or if they do, they will suffocate him or her to death. So you may clearly see that this is physically impossible, that a large amount of amino acids could be neighbors of a single amino acid at the same time. Now, this is the reason why the protein structure networks are not having a scale-free degree distribution, because we don't have large hubs in these networks. Now, we have small hubs, like in the figure. I mean, there are few amino acids listed here or highlighted here with the red arrows, actually three of them, where you have several neighbors, like 6 or 8 or even 10, maybe. This is not a large number, but compared to this network, this is fairly large. And we call actually these amino acids as hot spots in this particular protein in the publication, what you can see on the bottom of the slide. And these are key amino acid residues which are the directing or governing the folding of this particular protein. So these are the hubs, actually small hubs, of the transition state, and you can actually see the transition state of the folding on this figure. So beyond this transition state, the folding is processing continuously, and the final state will be formed. And this folding process is governed by these three amino acids in this protein, which is not obvious because this protein has actually more than 100 amino acids or even more. So it is not quite obvious that only three amino acids are governing this folding process. And actually these three amino acids are the hubs, are the small hubs in this protein. So those few hubs and small hubs which do exist in protein structure do have a meaning, like on this slide. Now, key segments of protein structures is the title of the next slide, where I'm showing you a cytochrome P450 protein. You may know that this is a protein which is an oxidative protein, and it is metabolically transforming those molecules, which are foreign molecules in our body, and helping their secretion by urine. The reason of this, that if you oxidize a molecule, then the molecule is becoming more water soluble, and if it's becoming more water soluble, then you can secrete it more likely by urine. So this is a very simple mechanism, and there is a large family of these cytochrome P450 proteins, because each of them is specialized to a certain class of unknown chemicals, actually, which haven't been with which the organism haven't met yet. So this particular protein is one member of this family, cytochrome P450B4. And you can see the amino acids as red nodes of this network, and actually the bones, the edges between the amino acids are hydrogen bones between the amino acids in this particular network, in this particular representation. Very interestingly, hydrogen bones are pretty much corresponding to the distances between the amino acids, but obviously not all distances are covered in this network representation. And therefore, it is a relatively sparse network, and you can actually visualize it and see it quite nicely. The question is, where do you find key segments of amino acids, key amino acid segments, besides hubs at this network? And the answer is that actually you do see two segments of the network when this network has a hole. One is clearly visualizable, quite visible at the bottom of this molecule. The other one is on the right side of the molecule. It is not that visual, but you may see it if you check the structure carefully. There are two holes in this whole network or whole protein structure altogether. The very first one, the large one, is actually the active site of this molecule. This is where the enzymatic catalysis is going on. Obviously, those amino acids which are at this hole, in protruding into this hole, are very important amino acids. You can see a few amino acids which are bridging the middle of this hole. Those amino acids are actually determining the size of the inner cavity, which is the site of the catalytic change, of the catalytic oxidation process, which is catalyzed by this enzyme. So those amino acids which are bridging that hole in the middle, those are very important. The other amino acids which are bridging the same hole at the edge of the molecule, those are important as well, because those are regulating the accessibility of this active center, and therefore those amino acids outside are regulating which molecules can be bound by this protein. So they are regulating the catalytic affinity for different substrates by this cytochrome P450 enzyme. So we call actually these residues, amino acid residues, as ENCORE and latch residues. These are bridges in the network, central residues quite sometimes, and behave as hinges in the protein structure. We also call them discrete bridges. This is a dynamic representation because they are vibrating differently than the rest of the protein, and this is the reason that they behave, or this is actually related to their position, that they are bridges different modules, because one module is vibrating with a certain frequency, another module is vibrating with a certain other frequency, and these bridging molecules or these bridging amino acids are vibrating sometimes with this frequency of module A and sometimes with that frequency of module B. So these discrete bridges are actually representing independent dynamic regions of the proteins by themselves. In the next slide, I'm showing you the modules of the methionine tRNA synthetase network. Methionine tRNA synthetase is an enzyme which is synthesizing the methionine tRNA molecule. This enzyme is shown on the figure as various network representations. And you can see, for example, on the right bottom part, panel E of this network representation, that it has approximately four or five modules. The different colors are meaning different modules, so you have two blue modules, one orange module, one magenta module, and one green module in this protein. You can actually see quite nicely that the protein structure is defining itself by the modules, obviously, because if there is a lobe of the protein, which is, for example, this magenta connecting peptide CP domain of the protein, this lobe, this segment of the protein, is only loosely attached to the other segments of the protein. Therefore, it is rationally defined as a module. And indeed, in the network representation, if you calculate carefully the modular composition of this protein, you may define this segment as an independent module. So this shows you that the modular analysis of networks is actually quite well showing us or revealing us the different structural segments of the protein as a network structure. This is not by far not obvious. Now, what I am showing you on the next slide, this is not obvious even more or even less obvious because here, bridges of different modules of the protein structures are amino acids, which have been proven to be the amino acids which transmit the conformational changes, the signals inside of this protein, which is actually the very same methionine tRNA synthetase or synthase protein. This is by far less obvious than the previous result, but this is again very convincingly shown in network analysis data, what I am representing in these papers, like the bioinformatics paper I'm showing you here. Now, on the next slide, I'm showing you a different type of network. This is a completely different type of network of any other networks, what I'm showing you on these slides generally, because here the nodes are not physical entities like amino acids or proteins or people or power grid elements and so on. The nodes on this network are states, various conformational states of the same polypeptide or oligopeptide. This is a 20 amino acid peptide only, and as you may remember from your basic studies, peptides usually do not have a stable three-dimensional structure. There are only a few examples which are exceptional. For example, insulin, and insulin has two disulfide bridges, and therefore it does have a stable three-dimensional structure. But a peptide in the size of insulin, like a 20 amino acid peptide on this slide, doesn't have a three-dimensional structure which is stable. So you can see that actually there are many states which can be formed, and many conformations which can be formed by this peptide on this slide. Each of the nodes, each of the dots on this figure is representing one of these conformations. And what are the edges connecting the nodes? The edges are the possible transitions between these folding states, between these conformations of this protein. Now, what is very interesting, that you can see actually modules or groups of this network. There are certain conformations, like the FS conformation on the bottom of the slide, which are highly populated. The size of the node is actually representing the probability of the conformation, and these conformations are surrounded by several other conformations which are also relatively highly populated. But then there is a decrease in the density of the connections and the probability of occupancy, and this means a conformational transition from one relatively stable conformation to another relatively stable conformation. And what is very interesting to know that and very helpful, and very, we are very lucky that this is true, that this is again a small word network. And why is it important, or why is it good? Because this means that any conformations of this peptide can be reached by any, from any other conformations, by only a few steps. Which means that this peptide, if there would be, I mean, let's suppose that this peptide is an enzyme, and if this peptide were an enzyme, this is not because it is too small for that. If this peptide would be an enzyme, then only one of the conformations would be active, catalytically active. So the peptide should find this conformation, this single active conformation from the many conformations which it may occupy. Now, if this whole network is a small word, that means that this pathway, or that this folding sequence, which have to exist when this protein is actually folding, that sequence is relatively short, so it has a short time that this protein is actually folding, finding its final structural conformation. Obviously, larger polypeptides, like those which are forming the protein structures, are having fewer conformations, usually only two or three different conformations, which can be switching from each other or to each other by allosteric regulators, or by conformational changes of the protein inflicted by other neighboring proteins, like in the signaling cascades, or by phosphorylation, like as well in the signaling cascades. So there are only a few conformations usually in the protein structure, but this figure is a nice figure showing you many of this conformation, because this is a small peptide which is occupying a lot of conformations at the same time. Now, I'm talking to you about cellular networks in this very last slide of this this lecture, and these cellular networks are actually the networks which we find in our cells, inside the cells. There are six types of networks which usually discriminate in cellular structures, and three of them are structurally defined networks, like those of the protein-protein interaction networks at the bottom, when the nodes are proteins and the edges are interactions of these proteins, or the signaling networks, which are actually parts of the protein-protein interaction network extended by microRNA interactions and few other interactions, which are the signaling pathways and their crosstalks leading the signal to the nucleus, and the gene transcription network, which is actually the end of the signaling network, showing you the different interactions between transcription factors and the DNA segments in the nucleus, and the mechanism behind the transcriptional events. Now, the other networks are also very important, which are the membrane organelle network at the top of this slide. Our cells are actually forming different substructures, like mitochondria, like endoplasmic reticulum, and many other structures. And most of these structures, practically all of these structures, are surrounded by membranes. But these membranes are not isolated. These membranes are continuously communicating with each other by vesicles, by intermembrane channels, and lipid channels, actually. So this whole cellular structure is a whole network, is a continuous network. But we have relatively few information about this, and a few pieces of information, and therefore we are not usually talking about this as a network. Now, the cytoskeletal network is also a structural network of this cellular structure, and it is containing the various cytoskeletal elements, like actins, like tubulins, and secondary filaments like vimentins, or other stress fibers, and these are the actually the nodes, and the connections are those protein structures which are physically connecting these fibers. This is also a three-dimensional network inside the cell, obviously overlapping with all the other networks visualized on this image. The last network, which I'm talking about, the metabolic network, this is a different network than the others, because here the nodes are actually small molecules like glucose or glucose 6-phosphate or others, fructose and so on, the whole biochemistry, what you have learned. And the edges are the enzymatic reactions, catalytic reactions, which are converting these metabolites to each other. So this is a different type of network than all the other networks I was listed on this figure, but this is also a very important representation, as you have learned from biochemistry. So this was actually our next lecture in the network course, and thank you very much for your listening, and see you, or please visit the next lecture as well.